Hey guys, this is Beth Golay. And before we get started with Marginalia, I just wanted to say that KMUW's podcast platform is made possible by High Touch Technologies, a software technology and business communications company that provides products, services, and support to all industries. High Touch brings the human touch to technology with a world-class team of industry experts. Learn more at hightouchtechnologies.com. And now, here's Marginalia.
This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia, notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
Author Stuart Onan has devoted more than 1,000 pages to the Maxwell family. A saga of sorts, three books, Wish You Were Here, Emily Alone, and now Henry Himself, have been released in reverse chronological order. And despite this reversal, more insights are gained as time is erased. I recently spoke with Onan about the Maxwells and his time with the books. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. Now, I understand that Henry Himself is your third novel featuring the Maxwell family. And the Maxwell family was first introduced to readers in Wish You Were Here and Emily Alone. And in the interest of full disclosure, I hadn't read those first two. So I tackled Henry Himself as a standalone to see if it could stand alone as a novel. And now I'm a little mad at myself for doing this because after finishing Henry Himself, I started reading Emily Alone. And I've also researched Wish You Were Here, and I understand that it was told from, you know, a variety of perspectives. So I guess I wanted to begin by asking you about perspective and the different approaches you took with each novel.
Well, I mean, originally I discovered, I mean, it's all a process of discovery, I discovered Emily first, and I started to write Wish You Were Here. And as I got into the book, I was under the influence of Tolstoy, and every character became interesting to me. And so I started, you know, giving them point of view sections until, I mean, even the dog, even Rufus has a point of view section in Wish You Were Here. And so my original intent was to write a book about Emily. And so I didn't actually, you know, fulfill that. And so 8 years later, I thought, oh, what is Emily up to now? And decided I would just narrow the focus and say, okay, one point of view, unity of point of view, and go a little bit deeper there. And so after I'd finished Emily, I started thinking about Henry just because he hasn't been around. In those two books, he's been gone in both of those two books, and he meant so much to the family. And I had everyone else's view of him. So it's that the old parable of the elephant. You know, every blind person sees a different animal in Henry. I wanted to hear Henry's story, Henry himself. And so I said, again, we'll narrow down the point of view so it's just Henry for this book.
And so with these books, we're moving backward in time, opposite of like how they were published, right? I mean, Henry has a voice this time. He hasn't died. How was that? You know, what did you want us to know about him that we weren't able to capture in those other two?
Well, I mean, his past, his secrets. I mean, his whole life, it's a life story. It begins with, you know, his mother named him Henry. So we're going way, way back to find out exactly who he is. And that's the question that sort of floated around this book. Who is this guy anyway? And who is this person who became Emily's, you know, life partner and this father who was distant and unknowable? So to get behind the skin, to get behind what we think he is, to find out who he truly is.
Well, and Henry himself, he did have that ghost of the uncle who he was named after. And is that how Henry was in the first two books, like a ghost a little bit?
He is a little. He's always on the periphery. I mean, they can never quite nail him down. I think Kenny says in one of the books, you know, that he's just like his father, sort of hiding. He either hides in the basement or, you know, he hides out in the yard and does the barbecue. He stands at the grill and flips burgers while everybody else is talking. And we see that then sort of taken a little bit further in Henry himself in the way that he avoids people and he avoids conflict.
You know, in the chapter titled Attic Treasures, there was a lengthy paragraph describing junk cluttering the Maxwell's basement. It was a roll call of the unloved and obsolete is how you described it. And it was like you were describing my basement. Or, you know, there was the description of Emily's grafted soap bars a few chapters later, or the reference, oh, I loved this one, the reference to the gerrymandered arm of the obituaries encroaching on the classifieds of the newspaper. So your characters are just so nuanced, and your writing seems to have, you know, such a keen focus on the mundane. What informs this? I mean, are you just a huge observer of life?
Yeah, and it's just daily life. I mean, this is the life that we all live, you know, and what is important to us? When I think about, you know, the movies that we're given, right? You know, the big blockbuster movies, and it has so little to do with how we really live our lives. So I figured that there's a whole world that's sort of overlooked. And Henry and Emily, you know, at this time in their lives, I mean, Henry in this book is, I think, 75 or approaching 75. Emily and Emily alone is almost 80. And their lives are, you know, they've gotten intimate. They've gotten closer. They spend more time by themselves indoors, and also thinking about their own lives and the people closest to them, rather than these sort of far-flung melodramas.
Did you have a role model for Henry? I mean, were any of his opinions your own? I guess I'm wondering this because when Henry was contemplating playing a round of golf by himself, his inner comments revealed an opinion about self-involved breeds like fly fishermen. And I found myself wondering if Stuart and Henry share opinions.
Not so much, I think. But I'm sure that Henry shares opinions with both of my grandfathers, my father-in-law and my father.
Will fans of the Maxwells come away with different opinions about the characters they've come to know and love? I mean, every time Emily would say something to Henry that I thought might be received as hurtful, I wondered if it was only because we were hearing the comments through Henry's conscience, seeing the world through his lens.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's definitely it. And the Emily that we see in Emily Alone is necessarily a gentler, nicer Emily than we see even in Wish You Were Here. And so each new book adds another sort of layer or more facet to the character. It goes a little bit deeper, rounder maybe.
So with each book, and I apologize for not reading the others first. I thought I was doing this right by just seeing if it would be a standalone.
Oh, you are.
Standalone.
You absolutely are doing it right by starting. And I think it's fascinating in the way that readers who read Henry's book first will then come to Emily and then Wish You Were Here. I'm
yeah.
hoping they will.
That's what I plan to do.
It is, again, it's that process of discovery, you know, through the books, who these people are within the family. And I think that'll have a very different effect going backwards. And I'm fascinated because I will never be able to sort of understand that effect or feel that effect. I mean, I know it's sort of built in there. They're all meant to stand by themselves and comment, you know, the books on one another. So I'm really interested to see how that's going to work. I built the first two books to be read almost as an Ouroboros, or sort of, you know, the two snakes chase, or one snake chasing its tail, because the second book ends where the first book begins. So you can run them around. But one book is just a week in the summer, and that week repeats in their lives every summer because they always go to Chautauqua. It repeats again, even in Henry's book.
Right.
So it's sort of like a, what would you call it? It's sort of a bauble on the necklace of the year.
So in what order should I read them then? I mean, I have Emily Alone that you signed to me. But I can go out and get Wish You Were Here first. Should I read that one first?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think you should go backwards in the way they were published and just, you know, go back to Emily and get her take on it and then go back to Wish. And I love that idea of moving back in time. There's that beautiful story by Joyce Carol Oates, The Wheel of Love, one of my favorite stories of hers, and it runs backwards in time. And there's a gorgeous effect at the end of it there. And I wonder if that effect is waiting for readers who read Henry first and then Emily and then Wish.
Okay, well, I look forward to that. And I loved, I could get a feeling that, you know, Chautauqua meant so much to the family, and it meant a lot to Henry before he had his own family. And I think one of the things that I wrote down when I read this was that, you know, was there a bell that rang that told him he could stop what he was doing and go to the cocktail hour or something like that? I just thought, oh, I need a bell. I need a cocktail hour bell, just like Henry.
Yeah, it's very close to, because you hear the bell tower all along. You know that the time is moving, and that's the only thing that keeps time moving up there is the bell tower from the Chautauqua Institute there. And when Henry's standing in the garage looking out at the water, occasionally he hears it. And it's a strange echo from Mrs. Dalloway, where we have the chimes running throughout the book.
Oh, okay. Now I have another book I have to tackle. you know, there was one other thing I wanted to say about your writing. And there was, I mean, holy cow, your description of the styrofoam, how do you pronounce this? Sarcophagi?
Sarcophagi, yeah.
Oh, my God. That made me just sarcophagi. Put the book down mid-sentence and shake my head in wonder. I mean, holy cow. Were you just waiting to use that? Or did you just, like,
no, it just popped up.
Wow.
That's my background in watching, like, The Mummy or, you know, the King Tut episodes of Batman. It just jumped right up.
That was fantastic. So is there anything that you want to talk about with Henry himself that I haven't asked? Because I've been all over the place.
Basically it was a way to see the what are the privileges and obligations of, a well-off white man in America, in mid-century America. You know, what was he supposed to be? You know, what did he have to live up to? And we learned right from the get-go, that first sentence. You know, his mother named him after her older brother, a chaplain killed in the Great War, as if he might take his place. So right there, the bar for Henry is very, very high. And I think he understands that from the very beginning. That's why we open there. And I think that kind of lingers or hovers over the rest of his life there. And I think that's one of the questions we have for our fathers is, you know, who did they think that they had to be?
Well, when you decided to go back and write Henry, you had to then change the clock, so to speak, and go back to the late 80s, right? Is that when this one takes place?
This one is late 90s.
Oh, late 90s.
To really, really run the clock back, you know, to the First World War.
And Sloan, yeah.
His uncle dies in the war there, and that's where I think really the seeds of the person Henry became come from. You know, comes from his mother, his mother's expectations, his mother's love, his mother's, I mean, also being the baby in the family and doted over. So he has to sort of prove himself to be, you know, a leader and a man and all these things. And he feels he has to do these things. And that's why he goes to war in the Second World War. And it changes him, you know, irrevocably. And he lives with that. He holds on to that. He hangs on to it. And so in this gap now between Memorial Day and Father's Day, Henry is definitely with me.
Mm-hmm. So what's next for you?
I don't know. And that's the thing is I really don't know. I mean, usually, and you know, my bookshelf, I'm all over the place. and yet I spent, 20 years writing or publishing at least 1,000 pages about this particular family. So who knows? I mean, my guess it'll be something strange, far flung, and very different.
Well, I look forward to reading it.
Yeah, so do I.
That was Stuart Onan, author of the book Henry Himself, which was published by Viking. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover more episodes at KMUW.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.